Welcome to The Word for Today, the broadcast ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. Pastor Chuck is currently leading us on a verse-by-verse venture through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, we'll be continuing with the third exhortation of Eliphaz as we pick up in Job, chapter 22, verse 1. And now with today's message, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
The third and final discourse of Eliphaz, the Temanite, who is responding to Job. He answers him and he says, "Can a man be profitable unto God, as he that is wise may be profitable unto himself? Is it any pleasure to the Almighty that you are righteous? Or is it gain to him that you make your ways perfect? Will he reprove thee for fear of thee, or will he enter with thee into judgment?" The view that Eliphaz has of God is that he is quite remote from man, that he is perfect and entire within himself, and that there is nothing that you can do to add to God. No benefit or gain for God if you are good. God is just sort of rather remote from us all. So how could you be profitable unto God? Now, in a sense, I can see where that would be very true. That God who created the universe, who am I that I could add anything to him? He's total, he's complete. Who am I that I could be profitable unto God? I can only be profitable to God as he considers me to be profitable. In reality, I can't add anything to God. I can't do anything for God. It's sort of an interesting thing that we talk about serving the Lord, but we know that even in sharing the gospel, that unless the Spirit of God is working in that person's heart, all of our words in the world aren't going to do any good. I can present a very clear case for the gospel. I can argue and present a strong apologetic. I can prove that Jesus is the Messiah. And yet, unless God's Spirit is working in that person's heart, they're not going to respond. They'll just shrug it all off. So a person cannot really come unless God calls them. God is working in their hearts. God is sovereign. And the thing is, I can really do no true work for God, except God has already done that work. What can I add to it? The amazing thing to me is even though God is the one that does the work, and God is going to do and accomplish his purposes, because how could you really stop the purposes of God? How could man hinder the purposes of God? It's like Mordecai sent the message to Esther and said, if you fail, God will bring deliverance for his people from another quarter. God has put you in a strategic place where you can be the instrument of God. You're in a strategic place. If you fail, God will work out their deliverance from another quarter, but you will suffer for it. God's purposes shall be accomplished. The amazing thing is that God allows me the privilege of being the instrument through which he accomplishes his purposes. That's exciting for me. I have the opportunity, I have the chance of being the instrument through which God does his work. Now, it is the work of God that is being done. I can do nothing. But God will use me as his instrument to do his work, but then he turns around and rewards me as though I had done something. For the reward of the blessing of the work accomplished, his work, he accomplishes it through me, but then he rewards me for it. Now that to me is just, you know, outstanding. That I have the privilege of being God's instrument. I can present my body to God to be an instrument to accomplish his purposes, his will. He does the work. He accomplishes the task, and then he says, good job. Rewards me for it. And if I fail, as I say, God will fulfill his purposes. God's whole purpose doesn't rest upon me. I thought it did for a while, and it just was killing me. You know, you try to carry that burden and that kind of a load, and it's just too heavy. You can't do it. God will accomplish his purposes in spite of me. That is why it is so manifestly wrong for any preacher, televangelist, or whatever, to try and put you on a guilt trip to make you think that God's whole work is dependent upon you sending in that sacrificial offering this week. And if you don't get that offering in, the work of God will fail and you will bear the responsibility of God having to go to bankruptcy court. I really wouldn't want to serve that kind of a God. The truth of the matter is that God is supreme, God is sovereign. And what Eliphaz is saying, there is a ring and a note of truth, but it doesn't tell all the truth. And that many times is dangerous. It's truth, yes, but it isn't all the truth. The truth is, you know, who am I that I could bring profit to God or could bring any gain or add anything to God? That is very true. There's nothing I can add to God. There's nothing really that I can do that would bring gain to God. He's complete. He's total. There is that totality in himself. And yet, the whole truth is that God has called me and chosen me and ordained that I should be his disciples and that I should bring forth fruit, abiding fruit. And so the fact that God has chosen to use me, the fact that God has chosen to use you, the fact that God calls you to these different things is just a blessed thing. He doesn't need you. He doesn't need me. And that's basically what Eliphaz is saying to Job. Hey, God doesn't need you, man. You can't add anything to God. You can't really be profitable to God. And yet, God has chosen to place the responsibilities of his work upon me that I might do his work and be rewarded accordingly. So, having said this, he then gets into his real thing with Job. He said, isn't your wickedness great, for your iniquities are infinite. Oh, man, what a charge. I will admit to my wickedness is great, and yes, there are many iniquities, but not infinite. Now he declares several charges that he imagines against Job. Unproven accusations. There is no indication at all. In fact, Job denies these charges when he responds to Eliphaz. Charges of things that were considered wrong, bad, even before the law of God was given to Moses. For this is what he has supposed Job to be guilty of. You have taken a pledge from your brother for nothing, and have stripped the naked of their clothing. Now, when a person would borrow money, there was always the collateral. And in those days, they would sometimes even give their clothes for collateral. Anything of value to give as a collateral for the loan. And so he is accusing Job of taking collateral but giving the person nothing really for it. In other words, taking, say, a diamond ring worth $1,000 and loaning him $5 for that kind of collateral. You've extorted from people and you've taken their clothing, you've stripped them. Now, under the law, interestingly enough, if you took a man's cloak for a collateral on a loan, you had to give it back to him before nightfall, because the robes that they wore were also the blankets for them at night. And so you were required to give it back to them before nightfall, lest they spend a sleepless night being so cold. So you've stripped the naked of their clothing. You've taken clothes for collateral. You have not given water to the weary to drink. One of the most important graces in those days was giving water to a traveler, to a weary person. And there are many instances of graves which extolled the person who died. And in the extolling of the person, there is that phrase, and he gave the strangers water to drink. In an arid area, a desert area, water is so vital for life that the giving of water was just considered a very important grace. Jesus, you remember, said, if you give a cup of cold water unto a prophet, then you will receive a prophet's reward. The importance of the giving of water. But he is saying, you've not been giving water to the weary. You have withheld bread from the hungry. Again, and under the law, and in the writings of the Old Testament, it speaks of God's concern for the poor. And there's an interesting scripture that says that he that giveth unto the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that the Lord takes up the cause of the poor. So they're accusing Job of not having any concern for the poor. We must be careful ourselves living in this kind of affluent society where we do have the poor around us, that we not ignore the poor, the needs of the poor. And so the accusation is that you've withheld bread from the hungry. But as for the mighty man, he had the earth. Now, in the Hebrew, the mighty man is the man with the big arm. What he's accusing Job of, strong arm tactics. This is the accusation here, that Job is guilty of strong arm tactics. He uses these strong, powerful men that you might, you know, have your own luxury. You have sent widows away empty, and you've broken the arms of the fatherless, the orphans. I mean, he's really accusing Job of some pretty nasty things. And because of this, snares, traps are round about thee. Now, Job was complaining about the snares And this is, he said, why the snares are there. This is why you feel trapped. And sudden fear is troubled you. Or the darkness. And Job was complaining about he could not see the ways of God. He could not understand the things of God. And this is why you can't understand the darkness. And the abundance of waters, the floods, have overwhelmed you. Is not God in the height of heaven? Behold the height of the stars, how high they are. Now, it was considered and thought that God lived on the outside of the canopy of stars, outside of the universe. Notice how high he said the stars are. God is in the height of the heaven. And you say, how does God know? Can he judge through a dark cloud? The idea is, God dwelling out there, if it's a cloudy day, he can't see you. You think you can get by. And you think that, how does God know what I'm doing? He's so far away. He's so remote. How can he possibly know what I am doing? And the thick clouds, he said, are a covering to him that he seeth not. And he walks in the circuit that is outside of the heavens, this canopy, this circle of heaven that surrounds the earth. Hast thou marked the old way with wicked men, which wicked men have trodden, which were cut down out of time, that is, in an untimely kind of death? Haven't you noticed how the wicked die untimely deaths, whose foundation was overflown with a flood, which said unto God, depart from us, and what can the Almighty do for us? And yet, he filled their houses with good things, but the counsel, he said, of the wicked is far from me. The righteous see it and are glad, and the innocent laugh them to scorn. That is, when the wicked are brought down, it makes the righteous glad. Whereas our substance is not cut down, but the remnant of them the fire consumeth. And then his advice to Job. Job, just acquaint yourself with God and be at peace. Just get right with God, Job, and you will be at peace. And thereby good will come to you. So again, the whole subtle accusation is that Job, and it's not just a subtle, it's an open accusation, Job is a wicked man, his iniquities are infinite, that he is only reaping the bitter fruit of his own wickedness. He has done these horrible things. He's no doubt guilty of these heinous crimes, and that is why all of the calamity has come. That's why he's lost everything. Now, the answer and the solution, Job, is just get right with God. Acquaint now yourself with him and be at peace, and good will come to thee. Receive, I pray thee, the law from his mouth, and lay up his words in your heart. Now, though Job is very early in the history of man, as we have mentioned, it is possible that he was a contemporary to Abraham. Very early in the history of mankind. Already, there were those writings that were recognized to be of God. There were those thoughts, ideas, laws, though the law of Moses was yet some 400 years away. Yet there were those laws that they understood to be of God, which of course later became codified, many of them in the law of Moses. But a certain recognition of what is right and what is wrong, of what is good and what is bad. And this is something that is innate within man. We know what is good and what is evil. He hath shown thee, O man, what is good. And so Eliphaz is just giving good advice to Job at this point, except that it didn't apply to Job's case. He is coming from a totally false premise of the reason for Job's problems.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse study through the Bible in our next lesson, as we continue with more of The Third Exhortation of Eliphaz. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of today's message, or perhaps you'd like to order a copy for that special friend or loved one, you can do so by simply contacting one of our customer service representatives, and they'd be more than happy to assist you with the ordering details. Simply call 1-800-272-WORD. And phone orders can be taken Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-9673. And for your added convenience, you can order online anytime when you go to thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse through the additional resources that include Bible studies, commentaries, CDs, DVDs, and so much more. Once again, that's The Word for Today online at thewordfortoday.org. And for those of you who still prefer to write, you can use our mailing address, which is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And be sure to include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck Smith continues his verse-by-verse study through the book of Job. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. Now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck Smith with today's closing comments.
God bless you, and may the Lord guide you in His plan for your life. And may you learn, as David, to just commit your ways unto the Lord, knowing that the Lord will take care of things as you just submit your life, its facets, unto Him. And may God just continue to use you as His instrument in bringing His love to a needy world.
What happens when a psychedelic pop artist teams up with a simple preacher reaching out to a lost generation of young people? Well, The Word for Today is proud to present a full-color illustrated coffee table book simply called The Gospel of John. It's a collaborative effort between Pastor Chuck Smith and the late artist and illustrator Rick Griffin. This new 96-page combination of text and image highlights the amazing life of Jesus of Nazareth. This simple yet profound paraphrasing of the Gospel of John promises to be treasured by young and old alike. Be prepared to be blessed in both word and image when you order the Gospel of John. Call toll-free 800-272-9673. Or log on to twft.com. And for our radio audience only, we'll include a Gospel of John witnessing tract free with your order. That's 800-272-9673 or twft.com.
This program has been sponsored by The Word for Today in Costa Mesa, California.